L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The Dry Cleaner Cast presents Need to Know. Need to Know is a podcast featuring conversations with security experts focused on the terrorism and intelligence stories dominating the headlines. This podcast is written, edited, and presented by Chris Carr. This is Need to Know.
Today we're joined by author and journalist David Nywert. David has written the fantastic book Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. If you listen to episode 18, I interviewed David about that book. David also writes for the Southern Poverty Law Center's blog Hate Watch. In response to the Tallahassee yoga studio shooting, we will be taking a look at the incel movement online, its history of threats and violence towards women, and its connection to the alt-right. We will also be discussing the far-right connections to the MAGA bomber and the Pittsburgh shooter who targeted Jewish worshippers at the Tree of Life synagogue. This is quite a packed episode, but I think is a very important one. And also it's worth noting that David and I actually recorded this interview on the day of the US midterm elections, which we reference briefly towards the end. This is quite a serious episode, but I hope you find it interesting. Thank you for listening.
Opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the filmmakers and sponsors of the film, The Dry Cleaner.
David, welcome to Need to Know.
Good to be back here, Chris.
For the benefit of listeners who may not have heard our previous episode together and may be unfamiliar with you and your work, can you just tell us a little bit about your background?
I'm an old saw. I've been working in journalism for, you know, since the late 70s in newspapers. And I happen to be in Northern Idaho when the Aryan Nations moved in there.
Yeah.
So I have a long background in dealing with far-right extremists. I started covering more intently in the 1990s and have kind of maintained it as a beat since the mid-1990s and, you know, gained some expertise in domestic terrorism. I've written a number of books on the subject, including books about hate crimes, militias, and the spread of extremist ideas into the mainstream. So my most recent book is Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. And it's coming out in paperback this month.
Oh, is it fantastic? Well, if people who are listening haven't heard our chat, we talked about it, I think, was it in episode 18, and it's a really, really good book. How is it going sales-wise and stuff? Is it going well?
Yeah, it's going really, it's going very well, especially the last month.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. It's been selling really well, even though, or really solidly, just not spectacularly, partly because it's been really hard for me to get media time in the States. The American media is really reluctant, has been really reluctant to actually deal. My book explicitly connects Trump to the radical right, and that's apparently considered gauche or rude to point out or something in the States. So I have a lot of people shying away from having me on TV. I did a tour in Australia and New Zealand in August and September that went spectacularly. And I'm selling tons of books down there too.
Brilliant. We're going to move into the world of incels.
So
for the benefit of listeners who may not know what an incel is, what is an incel? What is the incel movement?
Means, well, of course, it's short for involuntary celibate. And it's kind of an outgrowth of, it's definitely an outgrowth of the alt-right and the whole culture of, especially the trolling culture that you find on 8chan and 4chan and Reddit and places like that. That is also very much home of the alt-right in many ways. And it's basically, it's similar to the Gamergate complaints that women are being destroyed by feminism, and so they don't want to put up with traditional males, right? So you have all these guys that call themselves basically traditional males, although in many cases they're just guys who live in their parents' basements and can't get anybody to date them. But it's actually kind of pathetic, and they even admit that they're pathetic. That's the sad thing about it, is that they even acknowledge that they're not very attractive, but they believe they should be getting sex anyway. You know, and all you really want to say to them is, well, you know, maybe you could work on making yourself a more attractive human being who actually listens to people and that sort of thing. But you know, that doesn't seem to, they seem to be of the mindset that, they should have women fawning at their feet, because of traditional roles, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Because, you know, they're good breadwinners and we know, you know, that sort of thing. It's, and so it gets all tied in with this white nationalist stuff about feminists trying to destroy Western civilization and that sort of thing. It's cultural Marxism writ large.
Gosh, I remember that phrase, cultural Marxism. That's a fun one that gets banded about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very popular on Breitbart, you may notice. It is, you know, cultural Marxism is a hoax. It was basically, or at least it's a hoax concept. It was this concept basically devised by these white nationalists in the late 90s. A guy named William S. Lind more or less came up with the phrase, and he started selling it. You know, he sold it through the Free Congress Foundation there in the U.S. for several years, and he got picked up by Pat Buchanan, who and others in the white nationalist movement, both paleoconservatives and white nationalists, started bandying the idea about. And by 2009, it had actually, you know, taken on a life of its own and was considered a real thing by people within the white nationalist movement. And so that was, and it really kind of gained new life in Gamergate, because, you know, these guys go on to 4chan and go, God, I hate these feminists. They're trying to ruin my life. And the white nationalists would chime in and say, hey, well, you know why? It's because of cultural Marxism, right? And that was how they work. That's how they recruit. That's sort of the mechanism, the path that they go down, and that's how they pull all these young men. There was a very interesting story this week about how white nationalists are recruiting through these gaming platforms, video gaming platforms, particularly chat rooms like those in Steam and Discord and elsewhere. Basically, and especially Discord, they've found it to be a huge recruitment center. And because, you know, you get these naive young guys who don't know anything about history. They can tell you all about games. They don't know anything about history or reality or politics or anything like that. So they're just prime meat for these guys to go in and recruit. And it's pretty disturbing. And so that's what a lot of the culture is of incels. I think in many cases, I think many of them are gamers. I think many of them are, most of them are definitely young men with poor social skills. And their hero is, you know, this gentleman named Elliot Rodger, who in 2016 went on a Killing Rampage in Isla Vista, California. I'm sorry, 2014. Sorry that Roger did that. And complaining, you know, he left behind this sort of video manifesto about how women should be worshiping him, and instead he has to go kill them. Right. And they have, and indeed, incel culture has inspired a number of mass killings in addition to Roger, notably the guy in Toronto, a 22-year-old man in Toronto who drove his van into a crowded shopping area and tried mowing down, and did mow down women with his car.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a recent shooting, hasn't there, in Tallahassee at the yoga studio.
Yes.
And the killer, what was his name, Scott Brearley, who he's walked into a studio and basically he shot six women, killing two of them. And it's transpired he had a history of harassing women and posting videos on YouTube expressing his misogynistic sort of views and racist views. And he also expressed sympathy for the incel movement. Is there anything that stood out so far that you've sort of seen about this particular case? Is there any thoughts you have on this?
The views that he expressed were very much typical of the views you would find expressed in incel culture generally. And it is extremely violent and it is vile and it's really hateful. It's unhinged. And yet how can you move on that? You know, how can you can't arrest somebody for ranting maniacally online.
Mm.
And nor should you be able to.
I mean, that'd be half the internet in the end, wouldn't it?
Yeah. These are definitely warning signs. And maybe it's something that the rest of us kind of maybe need to take a hand in, is start watching out for our friends who are going over the edge. But yeah, incel culture itself is very much over the edge. So I have no idea how you would ever be able to handle that, you know, in terms of doing anything preemptive. But it's so toxic. And this is part of the general problem with the alt-right in general, is, you know, partly because it is internet-based, and on the internet, dehumanization is so easy and so common that, you know, it's just a natural breeding ground for this stuff.
I'm quite interested in what we can do for sort of family and friends who potentially are at risk of becoming incels, or sort of showing the symptoms, shall we say, or the signs of getting into that ideology. And what are the sort of, well, are there any particular indicators that people should look out for at the early stages? And are there, you mentioned before sort of online gaming. So are there any other platforms other than gaming that people should be looking out for that they're, you know, that their children are on or something like that? Because it's young men who are able to get access to the internet who seem to be at risk from this at the moment.
Well, obviously the really hateful sites like Daily Stormer and that sort of thing, which is basically, you know, it's neo-Nazism for 14-year-olds and 14-year-old boys. That's what it's designed to be. And it's frighteningly effective. But, you know, the more common is 4chan and 8chan. I mean, if you've got kids hanging out on 4chan and 8chan, I'm sorry, you got to take it away from them, because that's just a sewer. It's a cesspool. And or you got to do something about it, or you got to deal with it somehow, intervene somehow, because 4chan and 8chan are just cesspools.
Mm.
On Discord and on Steam and on places like that, be watchful, because they can really encounter these recruiters there. And, and ultimately, I think in general, the less time online, the better kids are in general. You know, I think we're finding out so much about what screen time does to your brains that it's not necessarily a good thing. Now, of course, I have a parent who has a kid who's constantly doing screen time. So it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to actually be able to do anything about it. But But ultimately, it does come down to what are your values and how well have you imbued those values in your kid? Because that will do you a lot more good than anything trying to be preventative. Because they're going to encounter this stuff eventually anyway.
Is it worth having the conversation, a bit like sex education, is it worth having a conversation before they discovered it themselves?
Yeah, I think so, totally. I think you should let kids know. Yeah, I don't think you should let kids wander into the internet without a talk about, well, you are going to encounter some real screwed up people on the internet, kid. And you should do and kind of give them a warning, heads up, so that they have the tools to recognize and deal with it. Because kids are impressionable. I think so. Those are the sites. Yeah, like I say, 4chan and 8chan, that if you're concerned about that sort of thing, those are the ones to watch for.
Yeah.
But in general, I think a lot of it has to do with, are your kids getting in social time? Or are they just hanging in the basement all the time? They should be getting social time, and it's fine to hang in the basement periodically, but all kids need social time. So those kinds of things are, again, sort of warning signs that they can be going down some really bad paths.
I've got a list of killings linked to incels in front of me at the moment. Mm-hmm. And one that's just standing out in my mind as we're chatting is Nicholas Cruz, who was the student and gunman from the Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, the Parkland shooting. Yeah. And he was inspired by Elliot Rodger. He said, he put something online saying, Elliot Rodger will not be forgotten.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them that we can say are being inspired by the incel culture. And, it's not incel culture by itself, but there's something uniquely hateful and pathologically angry about incel culture that seems to really unhinge young men. Basically, it's another way of people telling them, it's not your fault. Nobody wants to have sex with you. Really, it's not your fault. It's the whole evil world. And so because of that, you should just strike out against it. I mean, it's a bizarre sort of worldview, but there you have it. But what was it they said in the Batman movie about some people just want to watch the world burn? That's these guys.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always, it's again generalization, but it's always easier to blame other people than yourself. And as you were saying earlier about the far right are looking for these people and giving them a kind of a context, aren't they, with their obsession with feminism and the concern that it's changing the world.
Yeah, no, I think that it's part of what we have talked about, a lot of the alt-righters are actually young men from very well-to-do backgrounds who have a great deal of privilege, and many of them are just complaining about their loss of privilege or the fear or they're fearing for the loss of privilege that they enjoy. And it's kind of crazy.
Elliot Rodger himself, I mean, I remember, it was back in 2014, wasn't it, when his mass murder was dubbed the Hunger Games killer because he was the son of one of the assistant directors on the Hunger Games. And I remember somewhere, I think it was either one of the videos that they posted up on the news after the fact, where he was complaining about he didn't get the luxury car he wanted for his birthday, but he got a different luxury car to the one he wanted. I mean, this is not a guy who was hard up. I mean, it's madness. I mean, yeah, Elliot Rodger, he killed six people. I think he stabbed most of them, and then he went on a shooting spree targeting mainly women, and he injured 14 people. And he killed himself in the end, didn't he?
Yeah, well, and he originally pulled up to a sorority, and he was going to go inside with a gun and begin mowing girls down. But the sorority was locked. So then he's turned to just shooting people who were, or killing people who were nearby. Yeah, and as you said, he stabbed several people first. But yeah, and it was just out of this pure rage that comes from the possibly the least sympathetic sector on the planet, spoiled rich kids. And because they're too spoiled. I mean, it's just, man, what can you say? Because, you know, people who come from ordinary backgrounds where you learn to work and where you don't have everything just handed to you. You know, I come from a working class background and I was just always taught that I had to work for everything I wanted to get. And that included, you know, my romantic interests and everything else. These guys seem to think it should be handed to them. And how do you deal with that? How do you tell them, no, I'm sorry, you don't get everything handed to you? How can you explain that to people? I don't know. It's a bizarre one for me. I still haven't completely wrapped my head around it, to tell you the truth.
No, neither have I. I mean, I think some of it is definitely linked into the debate around consent and boys, sort of young boys understanding about consent. And I remember when you're growing up, dating is confusing. I mean, I personally never had a sense of, oh, somebody should want me. I just, you know, it took me a while to sort of find the right people. But I remember there are all these terrible books. And for life, I can't remember the name of them. I think one of them, what was it called? The Rules of the Game or something stupid like that, where, you know, where these people sort of do all these strange, you know, they act in a very strange way to try and entice women and stuff like that. There's a very strange culture around male dating. And from my experience, the worst people for advice about dating were other men.
Right, right. Well, so, and that's the thing. It is definitely attached to this misogynist culture, this part of the all right. And those people included these pickup artists who, these guys like Roosh V, who specialize in how to pick up women things. And it's all, you know, Roosh V has basically been chased out of countries for his tales of rape. And he's basically supporting rape culture. And so, I mean, that is part of it. And then there's, you know, then there's the sort of light version of all this. And that's Jordan Peterson, who's also very popular online. And Peterson, you know, of course, his 12 rules for life is all about, you know, telling young men to clean your room and do that sort of thing. But it's actually, at the end of it, it's profoundly authoritarian. And indeed, Peterson himself is really deeply authoritarian. He recently did the new introduction to Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. And in it, he has this, near the end of it, he goes onto this screed about how inequality is the natural state of things and that any attempt to impose equality is messing with the forces of nature. Well, that's just straight up social dominance orientation stuff. That's actually what defines you as a social dominance orientated person, is the belief that inequality is the natural state of things, and that messing with, I mean, you know, he basically set himself out as a classic social dominance orientation, which is very closely associated with right-wing authoritarianism. What actually SDOs like Jordan Peterson do is that they attract young right-wing authoritarians as their army. And of course, we were also seeing that same authoritarian scenario playing out in the United States with Donald Trump and his followers.
Yeah, I mean, we've had there's been the parcel bombings. I mean, there's been numerous, so many hate crimes that connected to Donald Trump and inspired by him. And I think when we spoke last time, I can't remember, but you said there was definitely a rise in hate crimes since Donald Trump came to power.
Oh yeah, a sharp increase. Just in the first month, we had over 1,000 hate crimes. And that was really, really unusual. And about half of them included people who used his name. when they, you know, were committing these crimes. They were chanting his name, Trump, 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 as a way of intimidating people, or Trump is going to get rid of you, or build the wall, or, you know, use his name or his rhetoric. And so that tells you that, you know, basically he has, in these people's minds, he's given them permission to act out. And that's functionally what he's done.
That Parzelbaum had so many Trump-related posters. It was almost like a terrible movie, you know. It was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, the MAGA bomber was – and you'll notice how quickly that story's gone down the memory hole. It's pretty bizarre because we were obsessed with the MAGA bomber for about 4 or 5 days until he got caught. And then when it turned out that he was a rabid Donald Trump fan, everybody went, oh, well, okay. And just moved on. And it's like, hello, are you? And partly because the next day we had the horror in Pittsburgh. And that also was very clearly inspired by Donald Trump. Mm. So, you know, because Trump, well, not just Trump, let's be clear. Fox News and all these people that have been whipping up all the hysteria about the caravan were what fueled that attack in Pittsburgh, along with all the anti-Semitism that they're using to whip it up with.
Two things. First of all, can you explain? I don't quite fully understand this caravan thing. Could you, for the benefit of us in the UK, explain this whole caravan sort of debate or argument or whatever it is?
Well, it's actually pretty simple. So the United States foreign policy in Central America has supported these dictators for many years, and in particularly in Honduras in recent years, and we are paying a price because it's turned into a human rights disaster down there, and people are fleeing the country, and they are in large numbers, and they're trying to flee in these caravans in large numbers to the United States, where they are going to seek asylum. They're applying for asylum. And this is a legal process. It's not that these people aren't just going to come over and just cross the border like border crossers do and try to sneak into the United States. They're going to go to a port of entry and apply for asylum, right? Mm. I mean, and that's what the plan is. But somehow conservative media, the right-wing media, particularly Fox News, has whipped it up in everybody's minds that these guys are illegal immigrants who are planning to cross the border en masse. And of course, with Donald Trump, he's throwing in there that they have terrorists and they've got a bunch of thugs and mean hombres and whatever he wants to call them in the middle of this caravan of migrants trying to make it to the United States. Mind you, they're still about 1,000 miles away from the border, and it's going to be several weeks before they reach the border if they get there. The idea that we need our military, especially 5,000 troops out there to meet them, is beyond absurd, especially because the vast majority of them are women and children. And so, it's actually and the bizarre thing about it is that this is all part of the anti-refugee campaign that Trump has been undertaking, and it really flies in the face of international law, because we're supposed to be like we have our own laws where we take in people who are seeking asylum. We have a process for assessing their cases, and if they don't. They don't make it through the asylum process. They go back. That's how it always works. What's happened instead is that these guys have whipped up this huge panic around it, and so now we have these hordes of vigilante minutemen or militiamen from all over the country, including my neck of the woods in the Northwest. Packing up their gear and heading down to the border because they're going to keep those refugees from coming over the border. You know, it's just a disaster waiting to happen, and I'm afraid somebody's going to get killed. So
Legends, the greatest social casino experience, has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I think it was a while back on Netflix, there was some documentary about these kind of militia type guys who, quote unquote, try and protect the border in like Nevada or Arizona and places like that. And they were just clowns. They were all just this sort of weird, hyped up, trying to be military operators. You know, they've got all these guns and all the gear, but they don't seem to have anything sort of between their ears. It was really strange.
Yeah. And what is between their ears isn't the healthiest stuff on the planet either. So, I've been dealing with them for years. So, these are the people that, you know, are vowing also to, go to arms if anybody attempts to, impeach Trump. So,
saying that, some of the pro-Trump protests, they bring out very small numbers. So, oh dear. So I don't know if they are that anything to really be worried about. But anyway,
yeah.
But the rhetoric. But back to where we were speaking before about the Pittsburgh synagogue attack, and obviously with the sort of link to far right and Trumpism. Can you just talk to us a little bit about that attack? Because that obviously happened, was it last week? It was this weekend of all these sort of killings that were happening.
Yes. Well, on Saturday morning, after we'd had this whole week of dealing with a guy running around trying to assassinate Democrats with pipe bombs, then Saturday morning, this guy walked into synagogue in Pittsburgh, in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, I might add, literally Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and opened fire with an AR-15 and killed 11 people. He had told everybody that he was all pissed off about the caravan, and he was blaming Jews for the caravan. He's blaming George Soros and the Jews, and including there's a Jewish organization based in Pittsburgh that this synagogue is closely affiliated with, that assists refugees. And he had targeted this group, this organization, on his Gab account. He was doing all this on the social media platform Gab. And just said, screw the optics, I'm going in. And basically went in to kill as many Jews as he could in this synagogue. So, very interestingly, you know, it used to be these mass killers would kill themselves at the end of their rampages. And you may notice that recently that hasn't been the case. And there's a reason for that. These guys all think they're justified. Okay. Yeah. They think they'll get off.
They think Trump will pardon them or something.
Yeah, Dylan Roof really believes that Donald Trump is going to pardon him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's mad. That's absolutely mad. Yeah. I mean, just thinking of it, I mean, it's God, how far we've come. I mean, you just wouldn't. I mean, this is definitely not the West Wing. This is, you can't imagine like a fictional president or any president pardoning mass killers, but now there are people out there who think that that's possible. It's insane.
Well, I don't think he would.
No, but the fact that people think he would is...
Give us another round and give us another another fascist president who's maybe smarter than I think that'd be possible. But no, I don't think Trump is that quite that evil. I think he's just a right-wing populist. Who is more than happy to unleash the Nazis in our midst if it serves his political agenda. So, Thank you, Donald.
Yeah. Well, didn't he call, where was it? Was it, I've lost track now which city it was. Was it Charleston last year where he, we had the right-wing protesters who, and he called them fine people. Was it Charleston?
Charlottesville.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, he said some of them are very fine people. You know, and this is how Trump deals with the radical right and has dealt with it from the get-go. He does this tango where he will make a gesture that actually appears to sort of encourage the right-wing extremists. And then when the outroar, inevitable outroar, erupts, then he reacts and issues an anodyne disavowal that nobody, including the extremists themselves, actually believes. And then 2 days later, he turns around and makes clear that he didn't really mean the disavowal, right? He's done this for all throughout. I mean, you recall there was a controversy over him, his endorsement by David Duke. He was asked about it. He wouldn't disavow him. Then disavowed him 2 days later, and then 3 days after that, sort of undid the disavowal. And this is just classic Trump. This is what he always does. And interestingly, he won't even answer questions now about the MAGA bomber. And when people ask him, have asked him about, well, to what extent do you think your rhetoric may be inspiring this violence? He says, what's inspiring the violence is fake news. You guys are inspiring the violence, not me. And he points at the media. So, this is just classic narcissist nonsense. But it does, unfortunately, right now, the United States is basically run by a banana republic dictator. And we have to spend the next 2 years, hopefully, depending on the results today, picking up the pieces, probably the next 10 years, picking up the pieces from this mess.
Yeah, indeed. Did one question, maybe lighter question. Did we ever find out what covfefe meant?
No, I don't think anybody figured out what covfefe. I think it was his fat little thumbs tweeting away, and he accidentally hit send before he meant to.
So it definitely wasn't some weird far right code that we haven't decoded.
No. It's just our brain addled president, I'm afraid. That was what I had to conclude.
No, I think it sounds about right. Sounds about right. Now, just wrapping up, really. Was there anything you wanted to add to what we've sort of discussed today? Is there anything that kind of we feel we're missing at all? I mean, one question I suppose I had was, how are law enforcement sort of tackling the incel movement? What's their sort of reaction to all this?
You may have seen in the New York Times this week that they did a long dive into how federal law enforcement was cut. Completely sleeping by the rise of white nationalist terrorism. Mm. And, it was a good piece, although somebody should also point out that, well, the media had a hand in that as well, including most notably the New York Times. I think that they're starting to catch up. We'll see. They certainly are scrambling now because they're realizing they did get caught with their looking the other direction because they got so focused on Islamist terrorism that they forgot that these right-wing nutcases can be every bit as violent. It's actually really – the problem is that we seem to be, in addition to, it's not just incels, but it is the radical right generally seems to be moving into a phase where I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this kind of terrorism. I think that they're really primed for it. They constantly are talking amongst themselves about civil war and that sort of thing. And they certainly talk amongst themselves about their desire to kill liberals. And that's a very common thing that I see on these chat rooms. So I don't know. And it, unfortunately, what has been happening is this, what Trump has been doing is what we call scripted violence. It's similar to what you saw with in Rwanda, where somebody in a leading position, the person with the megaphone gets up and announces the script of the violence that they are prescribing to take place. And then the recipients of that message go out and actually enact the violence. And that's certainly the case, it was certainly the case with the MAGA bomber, because he was going around and targeting people with pipe bombs who had been named by Donald Trump as his enemies, including CNN, George Soros, Hillary Clinton, Hillary and Bill, Barack Obama. I mean, everybody, that was on the bomber's list was on Donald Trump's list. And this is a very, very dangerous development. And I'm really deeply concerned about what will happen, especially in the case of a authoritarian president who has no boundaries that any of us can detect, and is going to be feeling increasingly desperate and angry over the next 2 years as he sees power slip away from him. I think we're at a very dangerous pass, Americans should be prepared for a wave of violence that, we need to protect ourselves from, but I don't know how.
It seems to me it starts in a way around, it starts at home, doesn't it? It starts in our homes. It starts in our social circles, really, doesn't it? It's all connected to our sort of dialogue with each other.
Yeah, it does. It does. But it also includes our law enforcement officials, and our law enforcement has been showing a real strong tendency to not take right-wing violence seriously, and that has to end.
Yeah.
That has to end. They have to take this stuff seriously.
I remember in the late 90s that it seemed to be law enforcement were, especially the FBI, were really looking into sort of these militia groups and the far right. And then I guess, as you were saying, it was 9/11 that kind of just changed that focus.
It was. It used to be very common. I didn't used to have trouble telling police officers that the biggest threat to their life and well-being were right-wing sovereign citizens, because over the years, right-wing sovereign citizen extremists have murdered literally dozens of American police officers in these pullovers. And in the 90s, this is when the threat first came up, everyone understood this. But after 9/11, increasingly everyone became so focused on Islamists as the big threat that white domestic terrorists were dismissed as one-offs. And nobody took sovereign citizens seriously anymore. So when, Black Lives Matter erupted and all of these police officers were accusing black people of being, they respond, their response to Black Lives Matter, you recall, is Blue Lives Matter, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
But oddly enough, Blue Lives Matter doesn't get all excited about, we've had a couple of actually sovereign citizens killing police officers in the last couple of years. They don't get all worked up about that. They only get worked up about Black Lives Matter activism. And there's only been one case, the Dallas terrorist who shot the five police officers in Dallas. He wasn't a Black Lives Matter activist, but he was definitely angry about those issues. and was doing it at a he shot those cops at a protest over basically shot them at a Black Lives Matter protest. And so, you know, that those murders were associated with Black Lives Matter, but somewhat unfairly, I thought. But in any event, Black Lives Matter itself is not a violent organization, and they don't argue for violence. They want reform. They want police reform. You know, that's what they're arguing for. And so it's crazy to compare them to the sovereign citizens who openly acknowledged it. Violent, you know, killing police officers is perfectly acceptable. You know, that's part of their ideology.
The police situation in America seems quite complex in comparison to the UK, because you've obviously it's state by state, but you've also got sheriffs as well as then state police and then city police. And there's no, it doesn't seem to be any, I mean, I could be wrong here, but it doesn't appear to be any kind of body that sets out a particular standard of behavior. It does seem to be down to the department and their internal training. And yes, this, to me, appears, I think, is why there are so many officers using extreme force in situations that are not necessary. And it just seems to be there's no sort of de-escalation training. It just seems to be all force, you know, overpower them and all that's it kind of thing.
For one thing, we have action movie culture in the United States. Mm. Seems to have polluted a lot of the way people want to approach police work. And secondly, I think that no matter what, I think police work attracts authoritarian personalities. So they tend to be pretty conservative anyway. And what's been happening in a lot of cases is that these guys are in the States anyway. They're just watching Fox News all the time. And they buy into all this stuff about Black Lives Matter, the propaganda about them. So I don't know. That's just my observation. We definitely have a problem with police here protecting when we've had these alt-right street events, street riots. We've definitely had a problem with the police very much favoring the right-wing side in these demonstrations and beating up on the left-hand side or left-wingers and arresting left-wingers, but not doing anything to prevent violence by right-wingers. Yeah. Particularly in Portland, that's been a problem.
There's a lot of online debate, sort of vitriol about Antifa, but not as much about the far right, yeah. You know, about Nazis, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, it is pretty funny. These cops will be out there basically being all buddy-buddy with these guys that I know are sovereign citizens. But they look across the way and they see the anti-fascists yelling, and they hate those guys even more, apparently, because they do hate the anti-fascists with the deep passion. And the problem is the anti-fascists are just a tiny faction. I mean, they probably number in the thousands total in America, and they're very, they have no power. They're not very influential. Basically appear in only a handful of urban cities, really. Whereas the alt-right is ubiquitous, numbers in the hundreds of thousands, and probably so does the Patriot Militia movement. So, you know, we're talking very differences in scale here, or very, very significant differences in scale.
Yeah. Well, David, is there anything else you want to add to what we've sort of discussed today?
No, other than, I am watching it. So we're recording this on Election Day, and I'm hoping that we have a positive outcome. Know of any good jobs there in the UK?
Oh, man, we've got Brexit coming.
Yeah, I know. You guys are in almost as bad a shape as we are.
Yeah.
But at least you don't have a prime minister calling the press the enemy of the people, which is what worries me.
Yeah, not yet. But we don't. Depends if there's a power change in the Conservative Party or another election. It's a strange time right now. I'm kind of likening it to, you know, those time travel programs where somebody goes back in time and they find themselves on the bridge of the Titanic. And they have this internal debate. Hang on a minute, we can't change history. We've got to just let the ship like hit the iceberg. And it kind of feels a bit like that at the moment.
Right. The time tunnel.
Yeah. I remember the time tunnel. I used to love that program.
I did too. That was my favorite show.
That was a great show. When I was a kid, I remember we used to roll down the grass banks pretending we just jumped out of the time tunnel.
Yes, exactly. Well, that was what they did.
Yeah.
Well, let's go find a nice hill for you guys to roll down.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, dear. I'll try and find that episode. But yeah, unfortunately, they still let the ship sink, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And Lincoln got shot. And Yeah. No. Well, right. And that was, the famous Star Trek episode that Harlan Ellison wrote, where they went back to and Kirk fell in love with Joan Collins.
Oh yeah, City of the Edge of Forever.
Yeah. And he had to let her die. Or else they would change history.
Oh dear. Yeah. What bizarre times we're in at the moment. But, it is election day, and good luck to you. I mean, obviously, by the time this airs, people will know what the... where are we at the moment? In the future, you'll know what the result is. We don't at the moment. So, so you either look back and be happy, or be laughing at us, or, I don't know, or be sad. I'm not sure. But, not a cheery one. But look, David, I better let you go. But quickly, just to wrap up, where can listeners find out more about you and your work?
Well, so my main body of work appears on the Southern Poverty Law Center website, Hate Watch. But I've got a piece going to run in the Washington Post this week. And I do a fair amount of freelancing. I had a piece go up on the Baffler last week after the Pittsburgh shooting that I'd urge people to check out. It's basically a debunking of the claim that both sides do it. But you can find me on Twitter under my name, and that's where I'll post everything that I write there.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast today. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Like what we're doing? Connect with us on Twitter at DryCleanerCast. Support the show by becoming a DryCleanerCast Patreon subscriber today. Go to patreon.com/DryCleanerCast. That's patreon.com/DryCleanerCast. Thanks for listening. This is Need to Know.
Night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com. Legends, the greatest social casino experience, has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at LEGENDZ.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.